Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The Brown Park Podcast is brought to you by Grow Clinics. They're Australia's leading hair transplant clinics, and you can go to growclinics.com.au.
Hello.
G'day, mates.
Today's episode is something close to your heart, and that's somebody that's been in jail.
I have never. Well, I've been in the lockup occasionally from, you know, being an idiot from during a night out, but never have I been in proper prison. Thank you.
So I'd throw that out. The guy today, his name is Baz Hulse. He spent nearly 10 years in an Indian prison for something that he did not do.
It sounds absolutely horrible. What do you have to go through?
And surprisingly enough, he likes to have a joke about it, and he seems like a lovely guy. He's going to be joining us on the Brown Park Podcast. Thanks to Grow Clinics.
The Brown Park Podcast.
Question.
Go.
Have you been in jail?
No. I have been, I got. I went there to be, sober up for a little bit.
Okay. Yes. So you've been sort of like in the lockup.
Yes. And I do have a funny story about it, right? Yeah. So when you go there, they say, do you have any scars or tattoos?
And I'm
like, yeah. So
you got tattoos.
I've got a
everywhere.
Tattoo here, I've got a tattoo there, yep. And I've got a 12-inch scar along the length of my penis. And they just stood there and looked at me. So clearly I needed to sober up.
Yeah.
Because I was just there for fun and games.
Oh, God. You didn't have to show them, did you?
No, I didn't. I think at that point they realized that I'd had too much to drink and I was full of crap.
Baz Hulse, welcome to the podcast, mate.
G'day, mate.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Holy shit. Okay, where do we start with you? Because you've spent about 10 years in prison.
Yes.
Prison in India.
Yes.
Which is one of the most full-on prisons in the world.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the very start.
Yeah, okay.
How did you end up in a prison like that?
Yeah, for all you Australians, I might look a bit dodgy, but I'm, you know, I've never been to jail over here. You know, I've always worked all my life, and I was travelling to Goa a lot. I loved the country, you know. Well, I loved India, as in Goa. I'd only been to Goa. And myself and my late mum, we decided to buy an apartment off plan around 2003-04. So this was getting built over the next few years. In the meantime, I'd go with, you know, my girlfriend who was with at the time or whoever it was. One time I went over with a so-called friend. This was 2006. And the year before, 2005, I'd come home and brought a lot of trinkets from Anjuna Market, it's called, basically. It's like a flea market. So I brought a wooden elephant and like a Buddha statue and some few heavy ornaments, and I brought them in my luggage. Mm-hmm. Now, in the airport, they said to me, because it was excess weight.
Oh, yeah, they'll slog you for that, won't they?
Oh, yeah, about £130. So
Jesus.
Just basically giving you that side of the story to explain, this so-called friend of mine said, oh, why don't you post them? I said, all the times I've been to go, I've never seen a post office, you know, they're like villagey towns. So he said, oh, give him me, give it your details, here's forms, fill these out, etc., etc., blah, blah. He sent them off all my gifts. We come back to England, 2006, 2007, and he was sort of saying to me, where's these gifts, you know, have you received them? What's it got to do with you? They've not come. He said, oh, I've put a few diazepam in and a few Viagra tablets, because you can openly buy them in the chemists over there. So I said, well, they probably seized them because of that, and they've not let them in the country, and that was that. I went back to Goa three, four occasions over the next two, 3 years, and then 2009, I actually went on my own, and that's where the story began. I got arrested in immigration. The next thing I knew, there was thousands and thousands of diazepam tablets. There was no gifts inside. So basically, took all my stuff out. I bought, like, T-shirts and creams and all different knickknacks, incense sticks. There was nothing of them, I found out eventually, in them boxes, but it was all diazepam tablets.
He sent them to England, or he was meant to send them to the UK, and then had you been back in between?
Yeah, because obviously, if I knew he'd sent thousands and thousands of diazepam tablets, I would have never gone back to the country. So I was still travelling. Unbeknownst to me, my name was on it's called an LOC, which is a lookout circular all around Indian airports, like I'm some big terrorist. Human error, they've not noticed that I'm at immigration, they've not seen my name flashing the three times I've travelled since the parcels were posted. The fourth time, 2009, that's when I got arrested.
All right, so you really wouldn't have seen it coming because you'd been in and out a few times
since. Well, of course not, no. I mean, it was a shock to me. I was arrested in Goa early morning. It took around 5-6 hours. They got a flight from Mumbai. Now, Mumbai is sort of the main international postage area, if you like, from, you know, in India, from Goa. So, like I said, they travelled over. We got on the plane, we flew to Mumbai, and that's where the interrogation began and where I began to realise that, you know, this is quite serious. There's a lot of diazepam tablets involved here, so...
Well, then diazepam, for those that don't know, it's Valium.
It's like a sleeping tablet, yeah. Basically. It's a pharmaceutical drug, and in India, you can actually buy them over the counter, you know. It's just, you know, I suppose it's not so, because it's classed as a Schedule H drug everywhere. It comes under Food and Drugs Act and everything else. But unfortunately, in India... it's called NDPS, which stands for Narcotic Drugs and Psychotropic Substances. So heroin and Xanax or whatever else are all clubbed as one thing, you see, unfortunately.
So you can buy them there legally?
You can buy them in the pharmacy, yeah, but it's obviously under the counter, but...
Right, okay,
not,
gotcha.
Not knowing, I mean, there's a lot of British tourists go to India, and I'd speak to a lot of older guys, and they go, oh, yeah, I've got 500 Viagra for when I go home, and... But you don't know, you know, how serious it could be.
Okay, so when they initially said to you, hey, this is going to happen.
You're coming with us.
You're coming with us. Yeah. What were you thinking? Did you know what was going on, or were you just sort of like, holy shit, I've got
there
no
was
idea.
Basically, like, there were six guys interrogating me. Now, the horror stories I've heard since, I was lucky because they electrocute your bollocks, they stretch you on fucking wires and all sorts. I was sort of one of the lucky ones where...
Sorry, can I just interrupt?
Yes,
you said they electrocute your balls.
Yes.
Wow.
It's definitely true because I've spoke to a lot of Indian prisoners and they've told me, I mean, it's barbaric, some of the things they do, but, I mean, they still hang people in the country, so, you know, they've still got old sort of archaic ways. So I got away with the interrogation side, really, a few slaps. It was nice for me at first because there was only one box. Then they'd gone through the paperwork, found a second box, and then they're saying, you're lying, you're lying. I was producing a court of law the next morning on the Sunday. Basically, I met a lawyer there that my mum and everyone had arranged from the base in England, basically. I got my lawyer, Tariq Sayed. He said to me, listen, you're going to be in for the shock. It's not the Hilton Hotel. You know, you're going to get 60 days. I went, 60 days? My head just fucking fell off, you know. 60 days, I couldn't believe it. Thought, I can't do 60 days in the jail. And basically, that's where it began, from the 60 days.
Turned out to be a little bit longer than that.
Certainly did.
When you first get put into prison and you're in for 60 days, what's day one like for you in those prisons?
It's horrific. It was horrific. I mean, I was scared. I'm not afraid to say it. So alien. People don't speak your language. When I first went in, you're put in sort of an after barrack until you're assigned your barrack. It's a barrack system in India where it's obviously the British ruled the country. Then jails are made for the Indian prisoners, and they're like a barrack stone structure system, a couple of hundred feet long. They're made for 80 men. There was 220 crammed in there. Shit. We all had a 6 foot by 2 foot, it's called a durra, which is a mat, a couple of mil thick mat, and you have like a white sheet to put over you. There were 6 toilets for the 220 men, only 3 ever worked. The smells, guys, honest to God, you can't, I mean, I can tell you everything now, but he's being sick.
No, I'm the one that's going to be sick, I don't handle this shit well, but go on.
yeah. So, again, it was sort of, the first night, you know, there was like, a cat had come in, it was quite an open barrack, because it's an after barrack, it was a Sunday, so there wasn't many prisoners in on the Sunday, you see. Crazily, they put all the murderers together in barrack 11. That was like the murder barrack.
Were they hoping they'd just clear themselves out or what?
Well, I mean, well, basically, it's like the drugs barrack. I think, well, you can get, oh, you can exit, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone sells drugs. I've been caught for drugs. So you're putting all the same type of criminals and clubbing them together. All murderers are there. So that was a bit sort of crazy to me. But I was put in the NDPS barrack, like I said, the drug barrack. And it was 2 floors. I'd walked in there. Luckily, there was a French guy in there, and he went, oh, come with me, and that, come in our handy. A handy basically means like a group. Mm-hmm. You have a group, and food in India is like a massive thing. It's a big ritual, you know. So basically, I got in with this group and sort of sell with them. It took a few weeks to get me a place against the wall, which you have to pay for, which cost me, luckily, only cost me a tenner. But as me being a foreigner, I believe this story is where they pay 500 quid and, £500 just to get. Because basically then you can roll your mat out in the day, but if you've got nowhere in the centre of the barrack, it's sort of, they're 20 foot wide, so you've got 3 6-foot mats.
Far out.
So if you need to go to the toilet, you dodge your heads and legs and climbing over people. But yeah, that was sort of the first barrack I was in. That was called Arthur Road, which was in Mumbai. And Mumbai is a crazy city as well, let me tell you. So,
what was the emotions going through your head? Did, like, I would be crying myself in this corner.
Well, you can't do that. You can't show your weakness.
Well, that's the thing, you see, because you go in with the mentality of, fight or flight sort of thing, and it was like, I ain't getting fucking bummed in jail. I'll kill you all before.
Backs against the wall, fist up. What,
yeah, but, you expect a lot of violence and stuff like that. They only fought over water. There's nothing to fight over.
Yeah.
You know, you'd had 19-inch black and white telly with one channel on, so you can't fight over what you're watching what, or you can't fight over having a game of pool or... There's none of that, so you just fight over water. That's all the sort of, that was the main commodity. So there'd be a few fights over the water. Like I said, it was just alien. It was just, you get people from, say, the sticks, in the villages where they've got basically no electricity, running water. They're just staring at you. And I've got sort of, tattoos, and some of them were touching me. Hey, fucking touch me. They're thinking it's ink. Like this, try to rub it off.
And so it's not like the American prisons that you see where guys are fighting alive, getting stabbed and all that kind of stuff?
No, I mean, over the 9 years, 8 months I spent there, there was a couple of violent incidents. Someone got shot at, actually, in one jail. One of the big gangsters I was very close with, one of his associates. Someone got slashed up. Everyday stuff, no, because the guards are ruthless, so it's not worth fighting because you'll get absolutely, done in off the guards. Plus, you don't get any privileges as such anyway, but they put you in a segregation barrack. Now, that's what I wanted, to be on my own anyway, so that punishment barrack for me, that punishment cell where I eventually did go, was ideal.
Brown pot.
We interrupt this podcast to say a huge thank you to our sponsors, Grow Clinics. Now, if you're tired of fighting the losing battle of hair loss, Grow Clinics offers advanced, results-driven hair transplant solutions with proven effectiveness. Their minimally invasive procedures utilize the latest techniques to transplant healthy hair follicles from donor areas to the thinning or balding areas. This means natural, permanent hair growth, not quick fixes or gimmicks. Now, what can you expect, I hear you ask? Well, their experienced surgeons boast a 95% success rate in hair transplant procedures, ensuring visible, long-lasting results. Most procedures are completed in a single day with minimal discomfort, and it's a super quick recovery time. They meticulously plan and execute transplants to achieve a natural hairline and hair density that blends seamlessly with your existing hair. And every patient receives a tailor-made treatment plan based on their unique needs and goals. So take control of your hair loss today. Visit their website at growclinics.com.au to book a free consultation and tell them Brown Parks sent ya.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Brown.
Pock.
So, at what stage did you learn that it wasn't going to be 60 days?
After the 60 days.
Day 61.
Well, basically, I was speaking to all the guys, and he's telling me these horror stories, and some are saying, my child's not been heard. I've been here 3 years and 4 years and 5 years. And I was like, wow, unbelievable. But me, in my naivety for, you know, we're British, we're powerful, they'll get me out, you know. They don't give a shit about me, you know, they don't care. Basically, after the 60 days was up, the prosecution have the power to extend it to 90, which they always do, and then they extend it again to 180. They get a 6 month, basically, to investigate your crime. They pulled out 15 witnesses.
How do you pull out 15 witnesses? From where?
The hotel manager, someone from the post office, who couldn't recognise me, by the way, because I'd not been in the post office. They called punch witnesses. So they might have five witnesses. One witness opens the bag, one witness seals the tape, one witness is absolute ludicrous. And that's why there's so many millions of people still under trial in India that don't have the cases heard.
So how were you processing all this? Because I imagine every day would have been like, okay, something's happening tomorrow. Well, I mean, did you always think that you were getting out the next day, or did you think something was going to happen?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. You've always got to see that light at the end of the tunnel where one day I will get out and there is something going to happen. And, you know, I got kicked in the balls that many times. I got about 50 tonsils now. But, you know, it's one of them things, you know. It was something was going to happen. Like I say, 9 years, 8 months, a long time. In that time, I'd planned an escape. I'll go back again, sorry, to 2009-10, my first 6 months in there. So after 3 months, losing my head a bit, I couldn't come every morning. They have these metal pots, what you get, you're like, darling. I don't know if you know darling. It's like a lentil. Yeah. You get that every day, but it's not. It's just dirty water. You don't get no darling here. You might get the odd bit of onion swimming in it or something, you know, if you're lucky. So basically, you get that, and you get that in your pot. So every morning, the pipe, I'd have your water. It'd be like a trough type thing. So you put your pot under, fill it up this deep. The poor people, the people with money, had a bucket on the opposite side, and they get someone maybe to fill the bucket. So you keep your buckets, maybe one or two. You keep it for washing your face, washing your ass, obviously. That's another thing you've got to get used to. You know, ain't no toilet roll over there, mate. And you're squatting, you need good strong legs as well, you know, because you're not sitting on no dinner.
Jesus.
Sorry, I just need to pause for 2 seconds. Dion, how would you cope with that? Because, you know, you don't cope with with bad facilities.
It wouldn't be good. See, I wouldn't cry about anything else other than the smell and having to squat and do a shit in front of people.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's not really in front of them. I mean, you've got the, your toilets outside, but they're only sort of, the doors are sort of below head height. So while you are taking your crap every morning, you're guaranteed someone to look over, and it's like, oh, morning, morning. That's why my head was going, because I was getting no peace.
Yeah,
you just want to get away. There's 400 men in a cramped area, and you're like, fuck off, or what I need to be. So I was nearly going crazy, killing everyone.
So you were convicted to 20 years.
20 years. So I'll just elaborate on that. I was actually convicted to 24 years because in default of payment of fine. So basically I got about a £3,000 or £4,000 fine on top of that. Now, in default of that, you get an extra 2 years for each count, so it'd be 24.
So when you get sentenced to 24 years, how do you deal with that? Like, how do you deal with it?
Well, I mean, it was a massive, massive blow, obviously, at the time. Another thing was happening at the time. Obviously, you lose people. People are born, people die.
Yeah.
I lost my nana. I lost one of my sons, a very close family friend of my son's. He got killed at a young age. And I actually got told about them as well at the time, which was like another double blow. Yeah. But again, it's sort of, it's very hard to process, but I'd look at, at that time, I was in with a very big gangster who'd been extradited from Thailand. He'd been on run for years. And he had a lot of connections, and I was trying to get a connection where I'd be able to get out on a parole. It didn't happen, so that's another story.
Did you think that the British Embassy would step up and start showing support or trying to help you?
Yeah, definitely. Of course, of course. But who am I? Again, you know, if I was maybe some... someone famous, maybe one of you two guys might have been, you know, you cover
no, they,
me, I come and rescue.
Me, they'll leave me there, they'll come and rescue Christo over here.
Yeah, so, I mean, they come on 3 monthly visits. We've got a visit every 3 months, and they bring me stuff in, you know, like little extras. You couldn't get chocolate, but I get sort of essentials, what you need. I bring Clinique products, actually, to try and keep staying young, so I won't fucking age in the jail. So I have creams and all sorts of extra bits and bobs. Again, they bring books and a few bits, you know, for sort of pass your time.
The interesting thing that I was reading was your stash of, like, Playboy magazines.
What it was, yeah, so when I went in there, like I say, I met all types of characters in there. That's why I wrote the book, because it's an interesting read because of the characters I met. I don't know if you've heard of Bollywood.
Yeah.
It's an Indian Hollywood, yeah. So I met a couple of actors that were in there. I met some of the big gangsters I met in there as well. I mean, some of the things they've done, you're just like so eye-opening, you think never in a million years. So one guy I was really close with, Santos Shetty, me and him become really good friends, ended up in the same cell together doing crosswords, and he was getting good food in, you know. I mean, I'd say good food, but he was having scrambled egg for breakfast.
Ooh, better than
you know,
rice.
Not rice. I mean, it was... rice 3 times a day, mate.
Oof.
3 times a day. And it was third class rice, yeah. You know, that you stick your posters on the wall with. You got to sort of break it up, really pull it apart. Yeah. Rice, yeah, it's not basmati. So, so I was getting good food. I also got the status where I could walk around in the courts. All the guards knew me and they say, no, you're, call him Santos Shana, you're his dose like friend, they'd say, and I'm like, you stay extra time. And so I was living like a king in the jail, basically.
Talk to us about the rats and the food, because I was reading some interesting things about the food that you had to eat because you were just hungry.
You know what? This is a bit of a wrong thing. This, I think, I don't know if it was that one. I come in one of our newspapers saying I had to eat. Ants to stay alive. That's rubbish.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have to eat ants.
Yeah.
Basically, what it was when you get your food, you have a lot of ants. You got the tiny red ants that bite you. Some days you'd take the lid off. You'd always check, make sure there's none in. The odd day, you know, I'd just pour it straight in, eat away once I'd mixed it, and then I'd see one of them swimming and be a few swimming about in the sea. I'd be like, fuck it, I'll just eat it type of thing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's there, yeah.
What was your day-to-day life like?
It depended on the jail. Like I say, for the first 3 years, 8 months, I was under trial. So you go to court. After the first year to 18 months, you start going every 2 weeks. You go to the court and there'd be no judge. Or you go to the court and there'd be no lawyer there. Or you go and there'd be no prosecutor. Or there'd be no guards to take you. Or there's always a fucking some problem. So then 15 witnesses took 3 years, 8 months go through. And then the prosecution at the end is fucking about saying, oh, let's call this witness back from Goa. But the witness from Goa has to get a 2.5 hour flight. So basically, they do these delaying tactics. Took 3 years, 8 months. At the end of it, I remember pissing myself because, you know, it's my life, basically. Yeah, through the trial, what my lawyer and the prosecutor sat at the front. And remember, the judge is looking down. I'm behind, sat at the back. And they're pulling on each other's foot. He's flicking his ear and fucking about. And I thought, you're fucking about there at the front. I can get 10 years.
Yeah, it's all fun and games for them.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's just their job. You know, they've not got a family fucking suffering at home and everything else. So anyway, that's gone on. And the judge says, I'd like to thank you both for such a speedy trial. I felt like I'm having a fucking laugh, mate.
Really?
3 years, 8 months. Yeah. But the thing is, mate, you know, it's like, how can one man judge your fate? I don't know what it's like over there, but we have a judicial system. Yeah. You know, you've got 10 people on the jury.
Yeah.
Like I said, I got sentenced. I went back to the prison. Luckily, we had the phone with Santosh and I told the family and everything. It was a bit, obviously, upsetting time. The following day, I went into the other barrack. Now, there was a guy from London there. He'd been 30 kilo of cocaine.
Jesus.
So I've gone to see this guy, and he's gone, fucking hell, Baz, I'm so sorry. I went, I know, fucking 10 years. But he went, no, 20. I went, 10? He went, no, 20. Look at the paper, newspaper, British man gets 20 years. So I went and looked at my charge sheet, judgment copy for the decision. Mm. And it said 10 years to run consecutively, not concurrently.
Oh.
So basically, to do 10, finish your 10, do another 10.
Far out.
But there was no provision in the Indian law for that. So how they done that, I don't know.
So a guy that got done with 30 kilos of coke got less than you?
He got 15. He got, well, essentially no, because there was no provision in the Indian law to give me 20 years like that. It would only be 10. But it still meant me going through the higher court, which is the high court. It's the same as England. You have a session court, a high court, and a supreme court. Now, you had to go through the high court, basically, to get that sentence concurrent. Mm-hmm. That took another 5.5 years. And it took another 6 months after that to get acquitted of all charges.
So you got acquitted. How long did you spend in prison?
9 years, 8 months. Exactly. Well, what it was, I spent 3 years, 8 months in the first jail under trial. Mm-hmm. I got sentenced to a place called you go to a sentenced jail then. You don't go out again to the courts and things. Once I got sentenced, a place called Kolhapur, further down near Goa. Basically, I was there. I got sentenced on the 5th of July, 2013, and I got acquitted on the 5th of July, 2019. So from sentencing to acquittal, it was exactly 6 years. But I only had 4 months left.
Yeah.
Now, when I come home, 2 years after I come home, I got a letter from the International Division of Police based in Manchester, where I'm from, saying that India want you back over there because they want to go to the Supreme Court to challenge your acquittal.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. I'll be on the next plane over there. Just, yeah.
Oh, fucking get the next plane.
Sorry, guys, my bad. I'm on my way.
Yeah, but you know what? Because of the bilateral agreement, I was a bit, like, nervous, but it also said that, you know, we're not interested in this, you know, you do it on you don't have to do it, basically. And obviously, I was thinking about going back to Goa at some point, but I'll never go over that side again now.
You have a house there?
I was going to say, what happened to the unit?
I got virtually my money back. I sold it to somebody while I was in the jail.
No.
Eventually. Just before I got out, my family ended up selling it.
Nice.
Because they was bringing some other law in India where you can't own a property as well, so they probably would have tried to take that off me as well. Sure. So,
well, can I also ask, so 9 years, 8 months, like, when you're outside of prison, 9 years, in hindsight, goes pretty quick. Did that 9 years drag out for you, or has it gone by in a blink of an eye?
Well, you just mentioned hindsight, so like you said, with hindsight, if I look in hindsight, it wasn't that long, but every day felt like a week.
Yeah.
Every day felt like a week when I was there. I mean, you know, you can always look back and go, fucking hell, that year's gone quick.
Yeah.
Well, that year can drag by, but some days were longer than others. Some days I was waiting for things, you know, especially my decision.
Yeah, a bit.
So I'll give you another example of the crucifier. We was waiting for this lady judge who's very good with the prisoners. She lets them out when they've only got a year or two left. She'll acquit people, you know, especially if they've spent a long time. Right. So, you know, she veers towards the defence. So we was waiting for her. We ended up getting her in around January. She sat on the bench, if you like, because another thing, they change the judges every 2 or 3 months. So she'd sat in about the January 2019. That's when I was acquitted, by the way. So I went in 2009. I come on 2019. And the case was actually finished end of March, beginning of April. Defence's arguments were complete, prosecution arguments were complete. Basically, she had to do a judgment, a summing up, they call it, which is a 3-4 page dictation of, I believe him to be innocent or guilty because, blah, blah, blah. It took 3 months to give a yes or no. So that 3 months was probably the longest time of me in there, because every day they'd shout your name and I was waiting for Barrios, Talibot, Bistro, jamming, like, means, like, you get your stuff and you're going, sort of thing. Like, every day I'd be listening, thinking, why? Just fucking tell me if I'm guilty. Yeah. I know I'm going to go home in November. Mm. As a guilty man, but I'll still be home in November. But them last few months, it was, like, horrendous.
So how long from time of acquittal did you actually get out of the prison? Was it the 3 months, or how long did it take?
So, basically, I was still in the prison, but the case had finished, as in the sense of, you know, they decided that the judges said, you know, all arguments are closed. Mm. It was only down to her. Now, normally, they give a decision within a week. Okay. You get your judgment copy within a week, which says, I'm acquitting him, or I uphold the decision of the session court that he's guilty because blah, 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 blah. But it took 3 months to give me that acquittal decision.
So once you get that acquittal decision, how long does it take to actually get out the front doors?
Right, again, this is another thing, right? I've seen guys linger in the jail for another 6-7 weeks waiting for the papers to come from Mumbai to the prison, right? Oh, yeah. So I had a guy from the Philippines, yeah, over there. Now, he got acquitted a year, 18 months into my stay, let's call it. And he was outside, he was working for me. I'd give him a few hundred quid every month, look after him. He'd send me letters home. He'd come to the court, get me good food every 2 weeks when I was at the court. He was basically a liaison for my family and everything. He's a brilliant guy. So basically, I got him to bring the papers.
Right, okay. Mm-mm.
I got him to go to Mumbai Session Court. I got him to go in there, get all the paperwork, drive 12 hours down to the jail with a driver and give the paperwork in. Now, he'd done that on the Wednesday. The superintendent shouted me in his office, stood up, he shook my hand, he went, congratulations, you've been acquitted. I was like, when can I go? And he went, we'll have to wait for paperwork. He phoned Ray, you know, Ray said, right, I'll get the paperwork, I'll be down tomorrow. So he set off at midnight, he got there early morning. I goes in the office, all my shit's packed, you know, what I've got from 10 years, bit of letters and whatever else, photographs. And I remember Ray comes in and he's crying, bless him, give me a hug, and his paperwork's there. So he says, I can't let you go now. So I went, what? He said, well, the judge has given order that you have to be deported from the country within 10 days. I said, but mate, I'll be gone in a fucking day.
Yeah, I'm out of here, bro. I don't want to hang around any longer.
But,
yeah.
Exactly. Spent enough time anyway. So, but it was a good thing the judge has done that. You know why? Because the prosecution, they run to the High Court and they get a stay on your acquittal and you've got to stay in the country for 6 months.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
They motherfuckers, lads, yeah, honestly. Yeah. So she'd done me a massive favour by saying you've got to be deported. No one's been deported before, so no one knows what's going on.
Yeah.
So he's saying, no, I've got to wait for the customs to come and get you. So he's on to customs and they're saying, oh, it'll be a few days. And they say, I said, so the Thursday come, I said, what's happening? Oh, well, just waiting on something back. So I'm itching now.
Yeah,
I'm itching to get out. Friday, I've lost my shit. I've marched to the office. I said, I'm a free man. So he said, yeah. So I said, if I walk out of there now, have a word with your fucking guard not to shoot me because I'm getting right off now. Yeah. You can fuck off, you know. So he done me a brilliant favour. He made a few phone calls. He got one of the young guards to come with me up to Mumbai on the Saturday. He had to hand over paperwork to the Foreign Office. He ended up having to come back home. He's telling me to come back to Kolhapur with him. I fucked him off, but I had to meet someone else. I get a call off my lawyer, get to the High Court tomorrow. The prosecution have gone to High Court for a stay.
Oh, yep. Shit.
So again, another long story, but I got out after 8 days of leaving the jail. Another 8 days later, I managed to get on the flight. But I still didn't fucking kiss the floor until I landed in London when I got home.
Brown Pop.
I want to say a big thanks to Grow Clinics for their continued support of the Brown Park podcast. And are you noticing a receding hairline or a widening part? Hair loss is a common concern for many Australians, but there is hope. Grow Clinics, the leading hair growth experts in Australia and New Zealand, with clinics in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, the Gold Coast, Perth, and Auckland, can help you get your confidence back. Grow understands that hair loss is a sensitive issue, and that's why they offer personalised treatments designed to achieve the best possible results for each individual, whether you're experiencing male or female pattern hair loss. One of their most popular options is a minimally invasive hair transplant technique. Now, it's performed by highly skilled professionals. This virtually painless procedure leaves no noticeable scarring, and plus, with Grow's online consultation, starting your journey towards a fuller head of hair is convenient and accessible. Do not let hair loss hold you back any longer. Regain your confidence with Grow Clinics. Visit their website at growclinics.com.au or call them today to book a free consultation. That's growclinics.com.au and defy genetics with Grow.
Many portions of this heavily redacted.
Anonymous sources.
When are we going to say that enough is enough? Aren't we tired of hearing the same celebrities and influencers telling us that same manicured story over and over again? What about everyone else?
Tons and tons of redaction.
What about those who don't have a voice just because they don't have a book deal, a TV show, or a million followers on Instagram? Their stories matter too. This is a place where we can finally shine a spotlight into the shadows and give a voice to those who would otherwise be silenced. Real people, real stories, without censorship or fear of backlash. This is the raw, unvarnished truth. Welcome to The Redacted. You can find us on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Brown Pop Podcast.
What was your first meal when you got out of the jail? What did you have?
I think I had KFC.
KFC was
yeah, but you could get chicken 2 or 3 times a year anyway from the canteen, actually, on festivals. Christmas, Diwali, their festival, and a Muslim festival. So you'd still have the taste sort of, a couple of times a year, but it was ice cream.
Ice cream.
It was ice cream. I'll tell you why. I mean, for the last, say, 5 years, I was in my own cell, and the room was probably 4 foot wide by 8 foot, maybe 10 foot in length, I'd say, with your toilet area, 10 foot. Yeah, so I had my own sort of place. I could keep it clean or clean as, but there was no fan. This is why it was a punishment. There was no ceiling fan. You definitely won't get aircon. So in the summer, when it's 50 degrees and you get locked in at 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, the most hottest time of the day, and I'd just sit there, honestly, lads, and it'd just be dripping off me, the sweat, just sat there. You got flies. You can't put a sheet over you. You do put a sheet, you put your nose out and fucking flies on it. Like, fuck off. So frustrating. Honest to God, you got cockroaches or ants on you in the night. But this was the worst sort of time, when it was so hot in the summer. Humidity was so high. And then this one English newspaper, I'd have ice cream dotted all the way around the fucking edge of the paper. And I'd just sit there slabbering at you know, honest to God. So that was the first thing I wanted. When I got, so we went to a place called Bandra on the Sunday seafront, and I got a couple of like feast ice creams, and that was what I really wanted, I'd awesome. Say.
And then before we let you go, what's, I guess, lessons that you learned through it all?
Don't smuggle diazepam.
He didn't.
Don't trust the friends.
Yeah, don't trust people, I guess. Looking back.
But obviously, don't. I mean, I class this guy as a friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, I suppose I've heard along the lines that he's saying, well, he wanted heroin, he wanted that. It wasn't that, but you still fucked me over. No. And I still suffered a lot. I lost a big chunk of my life. Now, I try and take the positives from it rather than the negatives. Yeah. You know, I've met a lot of people. It makes you wise. It makes you appreciate it. You know, switching a light on and off. I appreciate that. Yeah. Because it's 24-hour light, you know, lying in a bed, it's like heaven.
Yeah, not shitting in a bucket.
Well, exactly, mate. I can wipe my ass with as much toilet paper as I like. I don't have to fucking struggle for the water. Yeah, exactly. I think you've got to seize the day, because you don't know what's around the corner.
Yeah.
You do not know what's... You know, I had a brilliant life. I mean, I have still, I mean. But then, you know, I was a 36-year-old man. It was all going great, and it, my life was just took away like that, and I never expected it, you know.
But look, you can read about it in the book. It's called No Tension. The author is Barry Hulse, or Baz Hulse. Thank you very much for joining us, and your story is amazing, and I'm surprised you're still standing to tell the tale.
Cheers, lads. Thank you very much.
And we'll put all the details to your social media and link to your book all in the show notes of this podcast.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Thanks again, boys.
The Brown Pop Podcast.
Why are you happy?
It's cool. I don't want to be sad.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.